Hey. Good morning. Okay, so what we're going to look at this morning is a sort of really question of who do you think you are and our identity and who we are. And we're going to look at the story in Genesis of when Jacob wrestling with God. So, we're going to start with a quick recap of the story so far, just so that we get ourselves in perspective. So, at the beginning, God made the world, and he did a pretty good job of it. And he made people, and apparently that was even better. He did a very good job of that. But then, people made a mess of it. So Adam and Eve made a bit of a mess of it. So up at here, we've got the top, got Adam and Eve. They got chucked out of the Garden of Eden. So we're now going to have a quick bit of... we're going to be looking at Jacob, who's down near the bottom. So it's probably relevant to look a little bit at where Jacob's come from. So Adam has a son has several sons. The third one is called Seth. And Seth is the father of Enosh, who's the father of Canaan, who's the father of Mahalalel. And then we've got Jared, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, and Noah. And by this point, the world's in a pretty bad state. At this point, God decides that he's going to flood the world and we're going to start all over again. And we start all over again with Noah. And Noah then has three sons, Shem, Ham and Japheth. Apologies for my pronunciation's a bit wrong, but... Shem is the father of Arphaxad, who's the father of Shelah, who's the father of Eber. Then we've got Peleg, Reu, Serug, Nahor, the first Nahor, and then Terah, who's the father of Abraham. At this point, Terah and his three sons, Abraham, Nahor, and Haran, are still living in Ur of Chaldeans, which is somewhere around Babylon. And God calls Abraham, and he takes... God calls Terah, and he takes his son Abraham and his grandson Lot off towards Israel. They don't actually get all of the way. They actually stop somewhere in a place called Haran. And eventually then Abraham then continues on into what was then termed as Canaan, which now is probably somewhere more around Israel in the Middle East, where we're familiar with. We're not going to go into the whole story of Abraham. Abraham has two sons. First of all, he has Ishmael. And then he has Isaac, which is the son of the promise. He actually sends Isaac back to find a wife from his uncle. So Isaac ends up marrying... Rebecca, who's not on here, but Rebecca's actually the son, the daughter even, of Bethuel, who's the son of Nahor. So it's actually a cousin there. And Bethuel also has, as well as Rebecca, the daughter, has a son called Laban, who we'll come to in a minute. Okay, so Isaac and Rebecca then have a pair of twins, Esau and Jacob. Esau is born slightly before Jacob, and Jacob is born actually grabbing hold of his brother's ankle. And the name Jacob technically means to grasp the heel. So now we come on to the actual story of Jacob. So the name means grasp the heel, and it also kind of means a bit of a trickster. So he's a bit of a tricky character. And there's a couple of interesting episodes in his life. First of all, He tricks his brother out of his birthright in exchange for a plate of stew. And secondly, with the encouragement of his mother, he actually manages to trick his father out of the firstborn blessing, which is quite significant. And by this point, he's now not in a lot of favour with his brother, and his brother's probably fairly angry at him. And in order to, at the advice of his mother and his father, and in order to try and avoid being knocked off by his brother, he actually leaves and goes back to his uncle's house, or back to where his mother Rebecca was brought up. And so he's effectively running away from he's run away from his brother. He's gone off and he's now living with Laban, who's the grandson of Nahor. And there he meets, he meets and he falls in love with Rachel, and he agrees to work for Laban for 7 years in order to marry Rachel. But interestingly, Laban's actually probably just as tricky a character as Jacob, and Laban manages to trick him into marrying Leah first, and so he then marries Leah. He also marries Rachel, and he has to work another 7 years looking after sheep in order to marry Rachel. And after that, he then works another 7 years in order to actually earn some sheep and to earn some sort of independence for himself, because so far he's just been working for Laban. So he's actually now been working for Laban for 20-odd years, and he's been very successful with his sheep. And he's done very well for himself. So well, in fact, that Laban's getting quite jealous and gets quite fed up of him. And feeling this sort of animosity and this tension, eventually Jacob decides it's probably a good time to leave and not get into any, not make this matters worse. So Jacob then leaves Laban and decides to maybe head off back towards Israel. Back to Canaan. So, while he's doing this, Rachel, his wife, actually decides to steal the household gods of his uncle Laban. And Laban finds these are missing decides it's Jacob, and sets off and chases Jacob and accuses him of theft. Can't find any evidence, so eventually, despite the lack of evidence, they kind of agree to part. So at this point, this is the point where we come to this particular story. So Jacob now is in a bit of an awkward position. It's a fairly it's a bit of a mess, really. He's been living and working for 20-odd years with Laban. That's all gone. That's all ended up quite sourly. He's run away. He can't really go back to Laban and look after sheep there. And yet, if he goes back to where he was brought up, Canaan, he's going to bump into his brother, and his brother doesn't like him either. So he's stuck between a rock and a hard place. He's scared of his brother, and he's scared of going back. He can't go forwards, and he can't go back. He's in a mess, really. And at this point is where we come to the story we're going to look at this morning. So this is the passage of scripture that we're going to read. So that night, Jacob got up and he took his two wives and his two female servants and his 11 sons. I should say at this point he's only got 11 sons because Benjamin hasn't been born yet. And he crossed the ford of Jabbok And after he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions, and so Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled him with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip, so that the hip was wrenched, and he wrestled with the man. And the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And then the man asked, "What is your name?" So this is the sort of possibly the key phrase there. What's your name? Who are you? "Jacob," he answered. And then the man said, "You will no longer be Jacob, but Israel." So he gives him a new name, Israel, "because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome them." And Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." But he replied, "Why do you ask my name?" And then he blessed him. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It's because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared." And the sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. And therefore, to this day, the Israelites don't eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon. So, in some ways, we can think of this story. This is a crisis point of Jacob's life. He's in a mess. He doesn't quite know what to do. And it's interesting, the way he responds to being in this crisis is to send away his family. He sends away all his possessions, so he's on his own, he puts himself in a position. He also recognises that he needs God at this point. He can't do it on his own. So this is very much a crisis point in Jacob's life. And there's a key part in here is that the man that he's wrestling asks him, "Well, what's his name? Who are you? Who do you think you are?" And Jacob is forced to actually confront this question of, "Who am I?" Okay. So there's various ways, and we're going to look at that a little bit, various ways in which we can answer this question, "Who am I?" or "Who are you?" So we're going to look at a few of the different ways we can answer this. So the first one we can look at is our ancestry. Then we can look at what the past has done, how others, the influence of others, and what we think of ourselves. And finally, we'll look at what God says. So we'll start with the ancestry, which we looked at here. And the ancestry is probably quite important. There's a lot, when we read the Bible, there's actually quite a lot of ancestries in the Bible. And I'm not entirely sure why they're all there. But one possible reason is because they are actually important to the people of the Bible. And their ancestry is important to them. And because it's important to the people, it's also important to God. So Jacob can be quite proud of his ancestry. He's descended from some quite key, important figures, including Isaac and Abraham, the man of faith. And also he's descended from Noah. And eventually from Adam. And eventually, you can say, he can be quite confident that he's descended from God. So Abraham can be quite confident in his illustrious ancestry. And he knows, Abraham also knows that he's the child of Abraham, he's the child of faith. But he also has some balance. So although he can be confident about his ancestry, he also still knows he's not overconfident or complacent. He still knows that he needs God. And it's the same. It's the same with us. We can be confident in our ancestry. We can be confident that we also, in a sense, are children of the promise. We are children of Abraham, and we can have that same ancestry, and we can be confident in who we are. We can be confident that we're adopted into God's family, and that we are sons of God. And that should give us the confidence to actually be able to approach God and to wrestle with God and to seek hold and to seek hold of God's blessing for us. Okay. So that's the first thing that we can, first part we can look at, ancestry. The next thing that's going to influence is our past. So we've all been around for a good few years, some of us more years than others. And our past shapes quite a lot about who we are. And there's different ways we can look at this. So Jacob could quite legitimately have sat here and said, well, actually, my past is a bit of a mess here. I've been effectively exiled from my homeland. I've run away. I've then lived with my uncle for a while. I've then made a mess of that again, and I've ended up having to run away again. So he could be very negative and think, oh, well, my life is a complete and utter wreck. But it could also be reasonably, you can also look at it quite positively. We can also look at our past quite positively. One of the things that probably most of us have done at some point is write a CV. And our CV tells us, it's supposed to present a picture of who we are. Now, if Jacob wrote a CV, he'd probably say, well, actually, you know, I'm a very successful farmer. I've built up this farming empire. I've achieved, I can't remember how many thousands of sheep and goats that he's accumulated. He can also say he's pioneered modern farming techniques. In particular, he's developed selective breeding techniques in terms of the way he's bred more stronger and more stronger sheep and goats. So he's got quite a successful career, and that's but that's only part of the story. And if you've ever written a CV, this CV will probably spend nearly all of your CV will cover your professional career and what you do professionally. But it actually doesn't really paint a full picture of yourself, because we're also more than just our professional, what we do for a living. So Jacob, he was also a family man, so his family's important to him. And at this point, he's got two wives, and he's got two concubines as well, and he's got 11 sons, and probably a few daughters, although the daughters aren't mentioned. I think one of them is mentioned. So he's actually a very successful. His family is important to him, and he's got he's got a significant family. And finally, the other point which we often don't put on our CV, or if we do put it on our CV, it's usually fairly down at the bottom, is Jacob's a man of faith. He's the son of Isaac, and he's a son of who's the son of Abraham. So that also is a key part of who Jacob is, even though you might not necessarily put that at the top. So again, we need to have a balanced view of our past and where we are. So realistically, we've probably all made mistakes and made a bit of a mess of things in our lives. But we've all got good points as well. So we need that, but we need to have that balance. So that's the second point there. So the first point was our ancestry. The second point then is what our past, what that says about us, and how that changes us, influences who we are. So the third point there is what others say. And like it or not, we are very much influenced by what other people think. And again, if we look at Jacob, we can look at it in two different ways. So we can look at what people thought of Jacob. And first of all, we've got his mother. Now, his mother calls him Jacob, which really means, it kind of means trickster. It means grasps the heel. There's possibly some relevance there back to the fall, where God refers to Satan, says, "Oh, you'll crawl on your belly and grasp at the woman's heel." So it's actually not that great a name. It's not really that great a name. So he could be justly sort of a bit sort of miffed about his name. It's not a particularly encouraging name. So that's his mother. Then we've got his father, and it's quite clear when if we read Genesis, it's quite clear that his father actually prefers his brother Esau. He doesn't really cut bones about it. His father prefers his brother. His brother is a bit more of a strong hunter type man, whereas Jacob's more of a mother's boy. So again, Jacob could feel a bit miffed. Well, actually, you know, my father, he prefers my brother. I'm clearly second best. And then we've got his brother. And we've already touched on the fact that his brother does not like Jacob now. Again, his brother's got a very negative view of him. And finally, we've got his uncle, Laban, who's also his father-in-law. He's fallen out with Laban, and Laban has accused him of stealing the family gods. And again, Laban's got a pretty grim view of Jacob. So Jacob could feel pretty bad here, because he could feel like, oh, everybody hates me. Nobody likes me. But again, we need to get some balance here, because Jacob, we could also look at some of the positive influences people have had on him. So again, we can look at his mother. Well, his mother, it's fairly clear, his mother prefers Jacob to Esau. So his mother likes him. There were several points in the story where his mother encourages him, not always wisely, perhaps, but his mother does encourage him, and he can feel good about that. And again, we can look at his relationship with Laban, and Laban didn't just turn him out and say, "Oh, go away." Laban actually employed him, got him to work for him. He let Jacob marry both his daughters. And Laban's also trusted him to look after all his sheep and his goats and his livelihood. So he has in the past had a lot of positive influence from Laban. And finally, he's also quite popular with some of the people around him. So he's got two wives, he's got two concubines, so he's quite popular with the ladies. He's also got 11 sons. His sons, in all likelihood, probably like him. And so there's a lot he can feel positive about. So again, we need to maintain this balance between trying to understand, trying to feed and build on those things that encourage us. Okay, so that's more about what others think. So the fourth point we've got here is about what we think of ourselves, or what what we think of ourselves. And again, this is quite quite important. Again, though, we can look at this in a couple of different ways. We can look at this in a very negative way, and we can say, well, actually, we're not worthy. We're miserable sinners. We're failures. And we're kind of nothings. And sometimes we can get tied down in this this negative thinking, this low self-esteem. And there are several good examples of this. So there are various other examples. So Gideon is another person who, in the Bible, at the beginning of the story, Gideon is very negative about himself and doesn't think he's worth anything. And another one which we come across is Saul, King Saul. At the beginning of the story, again, Saul is very negative about himself and runs away and hides. Because he doesn't feel he's worthy of being king. So that's the negative side. On the flip side of that, we can be very positive about ourselves, and we can approach life with a much more positive attitude, and we can have a, well, we can do it attitude, and we can have that self-determination and be highly self-motivated. And all of these are very positive things. And there are lots of examples of people that we may come across, both famous people, where if you look at where there's success, a lot of it, they'll often attribute to that self-determination and that self-motivation. Okay, but we do need to be we do need to keep a balance, because if we get carried away with that self-motivation and the determined attitude, we can overdo it. So, and we can end up being pushed into quite negative traits like arrogance and selfishness, and we can end up breaking the rules, because the ends. If we start believing that the ends justify the means, then we'll end up pushing the rules a bit. And we can also end up thinking that we can do it all ourselves and that we don't need others. So again, there's a couple of examples. So we'll start with Saul, King Saul in the Bible. So though he started off being very meek and cowardly and trying to run away, he gets anointed to be king, and he ends up being quite confident. And towards later on in the story, he has a lot of self-belief. And there's a point in the story where Samuel tells him to wait for him at a certain place so that Samuel will offer sacrifices. And Samuel doesn't turn up straight away, and Saul decides, you know what, I can do this myself. And he gets carried away and tries to do what isn't his job. So his job is to be king, his job is not to be priest. And he ends up trying to do a job that wasn't his, believing that he could do it in his own strength. And ultimately, God ends up sort of appointing a new king, David. Another good example, which is a non-biblical example, but somebody who's a very successful athlete. If you take Lance Armstrong, so in a lot of ways, has been a very successful athlete, very successful cyclist, and a lot of it is down to his determination and his self-motivation. But in doing that, he's actually gone beyond what's reasonable, and he's ended up breaking the rules in order to achieve what he's achieved. And he's also been very arrogant. And from what he's actually not that. He's also been very arrogant and very bullying of his teammates and former teammates. So again, we see somebody who, on the face of it, had been very, very successful, but he'd done it by being too overconfident. So we need to get a balance. Having a confident, a positive mental attitude and some is good, and being self-motivated is good, but we don't need to avoid getting too carried away and thinking we can do it all in our own strength. So finally, we're going to come on to the last point here, which is God's view of us. So this is probably, as Christians, this should be the most important, and it's the one that we've saved to last. So far we've looked at all the ways Jacob could have viewed himself, and now we see what God has to say. And God says, you know what, I'm going to call you Israel. And Israel literally means struggles with God, or wrestles with God. So God has said, he's given him a new name. He said, well, you're not a trickster. You're a fighter. And it's the same. And it's not just a name he gives to Jacob, but he actually gives that name to the whole nation that is known as Israel. And in some senses, we can think of ourselves as Jacob's descendants. And so we can call ourselves Israel, or struggles with God. The phrase struggles with God is sometimes interesting because it can be interpreted in two ways. You can think of struggling with something as fighting against something. So he physically wrestled with the angel. But you can also think of the with as meaning with. So he struggles with God. So sometimes life can be, and faith can be a struggle, but we struggle with God. Okay. God has given Jacob a new identity. He's no longer just this trickster. He's actually a man of faith who can struggle. He also has this new partnership with God. And so at the end of the story now, we have Jacob now has this confidence of this new identity of being with God. So he can now go forth from that place in the knowledge that he's got God with him. And we can be the same. So we can, if we get into difficult, when life throws us difficult situations and we get in a crisis point, we can have that confidence that we can be with God, and that it's still a struggle, but we have God on our side and with us. Okay. So what we'll finish with is just a little thing, just a little aside about the nature of God's blessing. So in this story, we've seen Jacob wrestling with God, and we've seen Jacob actually demanding that he's not going to go until he's blessed. And at the end of the story, apparently he is blessed, but on the face of it, he's actually in fairly much the same situation. So it might be interesting to think, well, what was Jacob expecting? Or what did he want when he asked for God to bless him? Did he want to, what's he saying? Oh, can you give me a way where I can go back and live with Laban? Or can you send me somewhere else so I can avoid all of this situation? Or he might have said, oh, can we have a miraculous, instantaneous resolution of this disagreement with his brother Esau? So all of these possible solutions, or maybe he thought, well, oh God, can you send along your mighty army so that I can So I've got an army at my back when I face my brother, but God doesn't give him any of this. In fact, he's pretty much in the same position as he was before. He's not given any particular reassurance other than he has God on his side. So he's still in the same position. He's got to go on from that position and go and meet his brother, and he still doesn't know what his brother's going to say or think. So pretty much the position's the same. In fact, it's worse because he was coming into this, he was fairly healthy, and now he's got an injured hip and he walks away limping. So on the face of it, the situation is now worse because he's got a limp. And if you're going to go and have a fight with your brother, having a limp is probably not a good thing. So in the face of it, he hasn't really been that blessed. It's actually worse. But he has been blessed because he's got this new identity and he's got this companionship, this partnership with God. And so he can go forth from there with the confidence that God's on his side and that God is with him. We need to recognise that when we pray for things and we ask for God to bless things, God's blessing isn't always what we want it to be. It's what God wants. If we read on, we do end up with a happy ending, and he does get reunited with his brother. But at this point, at this particular point in the story, when he's actually in the midst of it, he doesn't know that. But he does know that he's got God with him. And it's the same with us. We need to know that despite all the things that life has throws at us and all the struggles, that we still have God with us. Okay, so just to sum up then, so we've been looking at who we are, and sometimes it's a good thing to take this time, to take a bit of time out, to think, well, who am I? What is my life about? And Jacob has done this. He's actually deliberately taken some time out to wrestle with these difficult questions of who his identity is. But he doesn't stay there. He doesn't stay in that place. At the end of the story, he actually goes forth from this place, and he goes. So he actually then goes forwards. And takes on the situation. So he doesn't stay in that. So although he's taken time out, he returns and comes back to where the situation and the challenges that God's put in front of him. And then it's the same with us. It's good to take this time to think. It's good to take some time out on occasions to think, well, where are we? Who are we? What's my life about? Where am I going? But we shouldn't spend all of our time thinking on that. We actually should go forth into the situations where we're going. Okay, so I'm going to stop there.